It's embarrassing, all the stupid things I can think of to think about. Is there anything that could really bring my mind back to my senses?
Welcome, neighbor, to Folk U Radio, Folk University's talk show, taking old school viral. I'm your host, Amanda O'Fox Gillespie.
It's embarrassing, all the stupid things I can think of to think about. Is there anything that could really bring my mind back to my senses?
Today's episode is produced in collaboration with Cortez Currents, What's Current on Cortez and Beyond. Today we ask, what would it take to create affordable year-round housing options for Cortez? This is the first of a three-part series called Finding Home, about a tiny community's quest to provide housing options. That community is our very own Cortez Island. And today we will look at what it has taken and what it will take to provide affordable year-round rentals on this little island. Cortez is a small, remote community in the Salish Sea. And like many small, isolated communities, our community has become a destination location for visitors, those seeking investment properties or second and third homes. In other words, our economy has begun to be shaped by economies much larger than our own. Throughout this series, we will examine what resources, tools, and ideas are available to communities in regard to creating housing options, and which of these are accessible and practical here. One tool recently made available to our community is BC Housing Funding. How common is it for small, isolated communities to get this funding? As we will hear later on from a guest, not very. I also reached out to get more specific stats from the BC Housing Research Center on this very question, and they told me, get back in touch after the new cabinet has been formed. However, the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing did issue this comment earlier in preparation for this series. We know that for many years, communities across the province, including small island communities, have been facing a shortage of affordable housing. Our government is making the largest investment in affordable housing in BC history, including thousands of mixed-income affordable homes already underway around the province, with more to come. Through the Building BC Community Housing Fund's first intake, launched in 2018, we are currently working with nonprofits to build new affordable rental homes on Cortez Island, 4 homes, Hornby Island, 26 homes, and Salt Spring Island, 80 homes. The province has also recently issued a second call for proposals under the Community Housing Fund, and communities are encouraged to apply for more housing to meet their needs. So that was a quote from the Municipal Affairs and Housing Ministry. Today, I welcome into the studio Sandra Wood from the Housing Committee of the Senior Society. We will also have clips from a conversation that I did earlier in the week with Ian Scott from Ian Scott Planning Services, who has been the consultant helping the Housing Committee of the Senior Society navigate the complex territory of BC housing, as I was mentioning above. Welcome, Sandra. Thank you so much for being here today with us.
Thank you, Amanda. It's wonderful to be here.
I was hoping you would start by telling us a bit about yourself and your role with the Housing Committee.
Yes, I'd be happy to. I am officially the housing coordinator for the Senior Society, and I've been living on Cortez full-time for the past 14 years, together with my husband, Philip, and he's been a long-time property owner. He's been here over 30 years, so I feel like we're a part of the community, and we're really wanting to make a difference and contribute in our own unique way. And prior to moving to Cortez full-time, I was living on Bowen Island as one of the many seasonal rental tenants, if you will, or residents. And I was lucky enough to find a property that I could rent 10 months of the year. So from September Labor Day long weekend until July 1st, when I would vacate so the owners of that home could have their summer holidays there. And I did that for 5 years and I loved it. I was lucky that I could go away and have my summer holidays when the owners returned to their place. But I got a taste of what that's like and how much energy it takes to move in and out, completely pack up your life twice a year. And I saw that happening here on Cortez when I arrived. And I was really lucky that the Senior Society offered me a job to help them with their first six cottages back in 2009. So that's where I got to know them and luckily got to see firsthand the power of what a nonprofit can do to actually solve a housing problem. And so I feel like I got my education from the Senior Society. I'm really happy that I've been able to come back 10 years later to help them now on this expansion they're doing. I wanted to say that part of my personal passion for housing, when I really look back at it, I grew up in family housing back in Edmonton, Alberta. My parents are immigrants to Canada. They came from Holland. And we were very fortunate to find affordable family housing back when I was about 5 years old. And we were there until I was 13. And I loved it. It was just so amazing to be able to be in a community setting with lots of other kids and lots of other parents and within walking distance to the school. And I realized that that was not only a great foundation for me as a kid, feeling safe and feeling free to roam. But I also later realized that that gave my parents the chance to save up a down payment to work towards buying their own home. And so that gave them the opportunity. And my mom is still living in that same house that they bought. She's now 88, living still on her own, very independent. And I hope that I'll be like that when I reach her age. But I realize that some of the motivation of some of my life experience that makes me passionate about this project on Cortez.
So you can you tell us a little bit about the now two projects, just a general kind of like there are two projects most of us have heard that are being, that have grown out of this impulse that the Seniors Society has had to provide housing. And then maybe segue into introducing who our next guest is going to be, Ian Scott, and who he is and why we've brought him into the project.
I'd be happy to. So right now, you're right. We are working on two projects, one being the expansion of the Seniors Village. So in addition to the six cottages that have been there for 10 years and happily filled with the tenants who are there, we've had a waiting list of over 16 people waiting to get into those six cottages. So we've been working on an expansion in partnership with BC Housing to add four more cottages in the Seniors Village, and that will provide housing for people over the age of 55. And it means we'll have a total of 10 units in that project. We're currently at over 50% complete construction on those four cottages. And we are planning to be finished by December, early December, planning to have tenants moving in before Christmas. So that's going to be a nice gift to those future tenants. And then in addition to that, we have purchased the adjacent property. It's 51 acres right next door to the Seniors Village and south of the fire hall. And that is a 51 acre parcel that the Seniors Society is holding the title on. And that is a legacy for future housing that will be for all ages, including more seniors housing. We envision perhaps 20% of those future houses will be for seniors. But in addition to that, we wanted to be able to house single people as well as families and people of all ages. So that's the second project. It's called Rainbow Ridge. And at the moment, we're at the stage of still pre-development planning and gathering all of the cost information so that we can put a really strong proposal in to BC Housing for their January 15th intake. And that is the reason that we brought in Ian Scott. He's actually been a part of our staff for almost the past 2 years. And perhaps it's best to let him introduce himself, but he brings the much needed knowledge of real world affordable building projects and partnership with BC Housing in other communities. So he's bringing that expertise to Cortez.
So here we will hear a clip from Ian Scott where he talks a little bit more about his own background, who he is, and who he is on this project.
Who am I? I'm Ian Scott. I'm by training a professional planner. So I've got a background in environmental studies and geography and mapping. And then I did my master's in urban and regional planning at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I did grow up, though, in Victoria, BC, so I'm a coastal person. And I started off my career in the world of community development. I worked for a nonprofit group called EcoTrust Canada, and then decided as I was getting increasingly into the world of planning that I wanted a better, you know, educational foundation. I was able to get some funding to go to the U.S. and do my schooling there. And then I came back to BC with a determination to work in local government because I do see a really important role for local government in, you know, building our communities. And if you look at sort of a focus more on localism, you know, in a theoretical point of view anyway, local government is really well placed to do that. And I spent 6 years in the Victoria area working for different local governments and decided ultimately both for personal and kind of professional reasons that I needed to do something different. I started at least as a consultant working just part-time so I could be home with my young son a little bit more. And so went out into professional practice on my own. I do work for both private and nonprofit developers. And so, you know, effectively I'm working for a nonprofit developer in the Cortez Island Senior Society, and then also now the creation of, you know, the Cortez Community Housing Society. So I'm really involved in all aspects of both projects. I'm what BC Housing likes to call the development consultant. In other realms, you might call me a project manager, but they like the term development consultant. So I work for the client, being the Cortez Island Senior Society, and I am, you know, an interface with BC Housing. But then also as a planner and somebody who's worked in the development industry, I'm the interface with the Strathcona Regional District. I'm an interface with the designers, the engineers, the lawyers, the arborists, the surveyors, the geotechnical expert, the environmental specialist. So I do a lot of assisting with hiring of people. You know, I manage the budgets and make sure we're not, you know, spending money unwisely. We're putting out RFPs or call for proposals to get good value on the money. And ultimately, it's trying to deliver a capital project on budget at a budget that is acceptable to all of the people involved. Up until recently, not.
So that was Ian Scott, the development consultant, it sounds like, for this housing committee. I hope I've gotten that more or less right. Yes. Sandra, can you tell us who else is on the team?
Yes, we have an amazing team of locals, mainly people who live here or have property here. So a few people that you'll recognize on the housing team are Aaron Ellingson, who represents the community forest, and he's also a local miller. We've got Andrea Fisher, who's the campus director from Hollyhock, and she totally understands the requirement and the need for having housing for staff in this community. We've got Bill Weaver as our movie man, making these incredible videos capturing the project at various stages of development. We've got Carol London, who is a retired accountant, keeping an eye on our finances, and David Rousseau as an architectural consultant to this project. And then there's also Elizabeth Anderson, long-term resident of Cortez. She not only is helping us on the housing committee, but she is a liaison back to the Senior Society because she's a director with them on their board as well. And rounding off our team is Ruth Riddell, who many of you will remember from the BC, from our ferries here on Cortez, but now she owns property both on Salt Spring and Cortez, so she goes between our two islands. And Valerie Wernett, who is an amazing writer and editor who's helping us with our publicity. So they are all volunteers, members of the Housing Committee and the newly formed Housing Society. In addition to that, we've got a core members of staff, and that includes myself and Ian Scott. And on top of that, we've got Haley Newell as our housing administrator, and we've got Kathy Winter as our bookkeeper. So it's a powerful team of people with a lot of talent, and they are your friends and neighbors and people who really understand, I think, what it is to live in this community and what it is to give back to the community.
Thank you, Sandra. That is a talented group of people who I trust to carry this project forward. So why housing and why here? People talk about the housing crisis in many of our urban centers. In fact, places like Vancouver have gotten international attention for the housing crisis that they're suffering. What does a housing crisis look like in a place like Cortez or in these other kind of small isolated communities? And why did this group of people get involved with that?
Housing shortage on Cortez Island is unique, but is very much shared by the other islands up and down the coast. And what we have seen is the islands have become recreational property for many people who live in bigger cities and even people who live out of the country. So they'll have a summer home here, but it's only occupied for a few months out of the year. And so we've always been really lucky that locals have been able to get seasonal rentals, usually in the off season, at an affordable rate, and that has been wonderful. But as the internet has made it more and more possible to do vacation rentals by owner, and doing short term rentals for more than just the summertime, so people wanting to get away from the cities for Christmas holidays and spring breaks and other times, that then starts reducing the availability of rentals here on the island for locals. On top of that, even though we have a lot of land on Cortez, undeveloped land, yet our zoning basically makes the developable property into acreages. So really the smallest acreage you can buy here is about 2.5 acres, and it goes up to hundreds of acres. And our zoning basically allows you to have one house and one cottage on that property. So you end up with a lot of land, but very few actual dwellings. And on top of that, you have the issue of people. I was talking earlier about seasonal homelessness, that we end up having a lot of people who are homeless in the summertime and end up having to go camping or share property with another friend or go couch surfing or basically share a room in somebody else's home. So there's a lot of moving, coming and going, to-ing and fro-ing. And that just sucks up a huge amount of energy that I think could be better served by putting into this community, whether it's through jobs, through employment, or through volunteer time and helping the community in other ways. So that is a huge cost to this community, having that many people constantly on the move. But the other thing I wanted to mention is we basically don't have options as far as apartments to rent. We don't have condos to buy. We don't have suburbs to move into to get to find a more affordable housing. On Cortez Island, you basically, if you can't find suitable housing, you have to move away from Cortez. And that certainly impacts a lot of our elders, people who can no longer manage a big acreage property on their own. And they'd like to stay here because they have friends and family and community organizations that they value. But they're basically forced to leave the island. And that's a huge loss of knowledge, of volunteer time, of friends, of community. It really unravels our community. So we're looking to find ways to provide rental options for those people who would like to downsize and would still like to stay in the community. So that's a really key part of providing seniors housing options on the island. And I think the other thing that people might not understand who live in the cities is you can be pretty confident in the city that your recreational facilities, like your your swimming pools and halls and things will stay open, and you're pretty well guaranteed your schools are going to stay open because you've got this incredible tax base of everybody who lives in your city paying their property taxes and paying their provincial sales tax and things like that that contributes to the budget that your city has to invest in your social infrastructure. But on Cortez Island, our social infrastructure is created by nonprofits and charities. And so if we don't have volunteers and if we don't have people donating their time and their money and sometimes materials, then things unravel. And that could mean, for example, on Cortez, that if we don't have enough young families having children, that we will not have a school. And not only will we not have a school for those children to attend, but that means all the jobs for the teachers, for the administrative staff, for the support and management staff, those are lost as well. And those are really important parts of our economy. And that's how it's all really connected. Like housing is so deeply connected to the fabric of our community and the facilities that we love and enjoy, as well as the economy that is so important to sustaining us.
Thank you. I still remember once hearing David Rousseau talk about when he first moved to the island, which was, you know, a number of years ago, I believe more than 20, that he was able to work on the island for a number of years and then afford land and then work a couple more years and afford to build a house, and how by his calculations, it was something like, you know, 50 years or more at an island rate that it would take just to be able to get land if you could even find it.
You mean now?
Yes. Yeah. So now how it was almost impossible, and it would be way more than 100 years, I think is what he said, before you'd be able to afford an average house with land on Cortez earning an island salary. And I thought that really struck me because that's not 100 years. That's not, you know, that's just in one person's working lifetime. That difference changed. And I think we've all watched recently as some of our houses have been sold off to speculative buyers. And so this was the second thing that I've really, that this show is not going into depth at, but I was looking at as far as tools go, that rural and isolated communities have. And one of the tools that we do not have right now are ways to tax speculative or foreign investor buying. So one of the tools that we do have that we're looking at more specifically today to provide affordable rentals is BC Housing Assistance. So Ian Scott, who we heard from earlier, the development consultant on this project, I was talking to him a little bit about the BC Housing Assistance. And what I wanted to hear or know about from him was this particular form of assistance that is available through BC Housing. How common is it for communities the size of Cortez, small and isolated, rural, to get this kind of funding in order to create affordable projects? So I want you to hear what he said, and then he'll talk a little bit more about the difficulties and the opportunities that small communities like ours have when it comes to providing this form of housing.
Up until recently, not very common. I think, the kudos to the Senior Society. Back in 2009, they did receive funding for for the first six units of the Seniors Village. I know, for example, there has been housing on Salt Spring for a number of years. But I know many of the other, islands, whether the Northern Discovery Islands or the Gulf Islands, don't really have much, affordable housing. I also work in Tofino, and there's four units of seniors housing there, and they've been struggling with an affordable housing challenge in Tofino for decades, and, they've yet to be successful in kind of getting that kind of investment. Part of that is related to the fact that in the 60s and 70s into the 80s, there was a lot more affordable housing funding available in BC and across the country, but it really wasn't directed for the most part to rural communities. It was more to urban communities. And I think the second thing that's happened is with, changing economy in coastal BC, the desirability of the coast as a place for people to live and travel. And also, I think an increasing number of people who have the ability to work both remotely, but also to afford second homes that we've seen, places like Cortez and other islands and small communities become more and more desirable places for people to live, driving up prices beyond what locals can afford, whether it comes to rent or purchase. And so I think we're at a point where the need for affordable housing in small rural communities is quite a bit more drastic and important than it ever was before. And maybe just a follow-up to that is I think when you look at, the level of activity in different communities around the province, that you can see applications coming from communities of all sizes. For this BC housing funding, because I think every community is struggling with the same thing and to different degrees, which is that housing prices, are not set at a rate that everybody can afford. And so it requires some government intervention and support to deliver housing to a certain segment of the population. And that segment of the population that needs that support, the evidence shows, is getting bigger and bigger. It used to be people really sort of below, kind of what some people might call a low income cutoff or a much lower income bracket. But now increasingly, the evidence shows that, even those, folks making, more moderate incomes, depending on the community, also need, that support, or else they're really stretched, to make ends meet. I think the reality is that, in my observation, is that housing has kind of gotten away from us a little bit, as a Canadian society. And we're only just starting to realize that. And I'm not quite sure what that means for the next, few decades, but what my observation is, based on working in this industry, is that construction prices have, far outpaced inflation in terms of what it costs to build a home now compared to 15, 20 years ago, or what it costs to build an apartment building compared to 15, 20 years ago. And then there's also combined with certain factors around how capital invests in different kinds of housing and products, For a long time in Canada, especially in the 70s, the federal government gave quite a strong tax break if you were building rental housing. They've never done that again. And so that's a problem for stimulating just generalized, you know, rental apartment growth. We've also had, we had a backlash in the 60s and 70s in places like Victoria. And I think it's extended out into, you know, rural communities against density. And so, you know, like at Rainbow Ridge and the Seniors Village, you know, there's more units per smaller area than, you know, than our, than people on Cortez are, you know, are typically used to. But if you were to build a private rental project, you probably, you know, are really going to struggle to do that even in the townhouse.